ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ अज्ञान तिमिरान् सो विल रीड फ्रॉम 9th कैंटो 14th चैप्टर वर्स 22 एंड 23 टेक्स्ट 22 विल जस्ट रिसाइट द 22nd वर्स घृतं मे वीर भक्ष्यं स्यान् नेक्षेत्वान्यत्र मैथुनात् विवाससं तत्तथेति प्रतिपेदे महामनाः. Urvashi said, my dear hero, only preparations made in ghee, which is clarified butter, will be my eatables. And I shall not want to see you naked at any time except at the time of sexual intercourse. The great-minded King Pururava accepted these proposals. Text 23, I'll just read the translation. The shloka is like this. Aho rupam aho bhavo naralok vimohanam kona sevet munojo devim tvam swayamagatam. Pururava replied, O beautiful one, your beauty is wonderful. And your gestures are also wonderful. Indeed, you are attractive to all human society. Therefore, since you have come of your own accord from the heavenly planets, who on earth would not agree to serve a demigoddess such as you? Purport by S.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It appears from the words of Urvashi that the standard of living, eating, behavior, and speech are all different on the heavenly planets from the standards on this planet Earth. The inhabitants of the heavenly planets do not eat such abominable things as meat and eggs. Everything they eat is prepared in clarified butter. Nor do they like to see either men or women naked, except at the time of sexual intercourse. To live naked or almost naked is uncivilized. But on this planet Earth, it has now become a fashionable to dress half naked. And sometimes those like hippies live completely naked. Indeed, there are many clubs and societies for this purpose. Such conduct is not allowed. However, on the heavenly planets, the inhabitants of heavenly planets, aside from being very beautiful, both in complexion and bodily features, are well behaved and long living. And they eat first-class food in goodness. These are some of the distinctions between the inhabitants of heavenly planets and the inhabitants of Earth. Purport to speak on. I humbly seek the blessings of all the great souls assembled here. Actually, this whole chapter, when I wanted to speak on this, I read the entire chapter. And it's full of all bewildering events. And it's like, you know, how can he do like this? You know, how can Moon God do like this? And how can Brihaspati do like this? And how can his wife do like that? It's all such questions coming to the mind. And on top of that, right in the first verse, Shukadeva Goswami says that, I will describe you the all glorious and all purifying pastimes of Pururava. So it's like, okay. But we believe in the scriptures. Is the word of God. One thing I understood is the scriptures are highly contextual, and you cannot. This is what point Govind Prabhu, whenever he gives class, he always quotes this one thing: the scriptures are not textual, but they are highly contextual. Textual meaning you can just take out anything, and then twist it and turn it to satisfy your meaning. Contextual means you have to understand it the whole thing, the whole picture. So scriptures are highly contextual. And second thing I realized is, as Devamrut Maharaj that day wonderfully explained, he said that the scriptures never present you the material world as a rose garden. You know, they never present you. So anything is possible. Sometimes when we come to Krishna consciousness movement, which is also very much Vedic culture, and something happens in some family, something happens with some devotee, and then people get shocked. Oh, how can this happen? The faith is shaken. But we see such things happening even in demigods and even in great personalities in this chapter. So, you know, material world is an unpredictable place. However, to read these pastimes with the purpose of enlightened souls is very purifying. Now, when I read this particular verse also, you know, Ghritam me vira bhaksham. So, Urvashi here, she's demanding from Pururava, okay, I can stay with you, no problem, but I want to have first class food made in ghee. So, the immediate thought came to my mind is, you know, just see this typical woman, you know, she wants to enjoy good food. But then Srila Prabhupada makes the whole thing very nice in the purport. He makes the entire, he actually brings out this as a positive point. So what Prabhupada actually says, that it appears from the words of Urvashi that standard of living, eating, behavior and speech are all different on the heavenly planets from the standards of this planet Earth. And later on he mentions that this is a very civilized life. So Urvashi is not wanting to have very good food and wanting to enjoy, but she's complying just to the standards of civilized society. So there are two things which Urvashi brings about in this purport, which she thinks to be uncivilized. One is the quality of food, and another is the quality of the wearing clothes, the way you wear, the way you should wear it, and you know, the way you should always be presented in proper clothes. There are two specific things she's pointing out. And regarding food, I don't know whether it is in the Hare Krishna Challenge book or Science of Self-Realization, I don't exactly remember, but Prabhupada mentions, he says, animal fat is required for good nourishment. He mentions that very clearly. No, animal fat is required. You know, often all over the world, many vegetarians suffer a problem of vitamin B12 deficiency. And that typically happens with this lack of animal fat, right? However, Prabhupada says, there's a civilized way of consuming animal fat and an uncivilized way of consuming animal fat. And Prabhupada says, the uncivilized way of consuming animal fat is to eat meat and eat cow. He should not even speak this, but he says like that. But, because he has to preach. But the civilized way is to milk that cow and drink that milk. That is a civilized way of having animal fat. And Srila Prabhupada says, that's what we should do. And if you even go on websites and try to find out which is the best rich source of vitamin B12, it is milk and cheese. And of course, ghee. So Urvashi is very intelligent. She's proposing that same thing. And the reason why vegetarians have vitamin B12 deficiency all over the world is because the absorption of vitamin B12 depends on how much you are exposed to sunlight. And because the modern civilized life, everybody is living in air condition all the time, and there is no sunlight exposure, body is sunlight deprived. And therefore, there's a vitamin B12 deficiency. There's no need to consume animal fat for that. If you have very good vegetarian diet, especially based on dairy products, and Prabhupada calls it as a food in the mode of goodness, and have good consumption and good exposure to sunlight also at times. In fact, Adhanath Maharaj was explaining recently in South India Yatra that whenever the sunlight falls on us, you know, instead of hiding from the sunlight, the devotee thinks that, oh, the sun is the eye of Lord Krishna. And this is the wonderful rays of mercy which is coming from Lord Krishna. So it's not only materially nutritious, but even spiritually nutritious, the sunlight. So it's very important. So that is the one aspect. The second aspect she brings about here, and that has been an aspect of controversy in today's ages for a long, long time. That is the aspect of not being naked. And she says, now this chapter mentions that actually Urvashi belonged to the heavenly planets, but because of a particular curse, she had to spend some time on earthly planets. And she's just making herself very comfortable and she's saying that, hey, you know, you are not supposed to do this and not supposed to do that. That means she probably knows that people on earth do something like this. So she's putting a consideration, hey, you should not do like this. Otherwise, there's no need for her to put a condition like that. But she knows it. She understands. She's an intelligent lady. So she's bringing out this point. And for ages together, in recent decades, there has always been a confusion and a debate between the moralists and the artists regarding this particular aspect. And they have one wonderful artist sitting here with us. Haridas Thakur Prabhu is the best person to comment on this. Well, I'm not an artist. But I have been reading a continuous debate. The artists, they strongly feel that the beauty of the human form is most wonderfully expressed when it is unclothed, when there is no cloth. You know? And in fact, if you go to certain art schools, you know, they teach also like that. So you are taught to see all these things and, you know, learn all these things. And they strongly believe like that. And all the moralists, whenever they come ahead and they say, hey, you know, you should not dress these people like this, and you should not show, depict these persons like this, you know, they always come and they preach. The artists are the people who always fight. They say, these people don't understand what is art. They don't understand, you know, what is. So, whatever I have heard from different sources, different expressions of certain spiritualists. I remember one time, Radhanath Maharaj tells this story, that he was with a Gaudiya Math sannyasi. And I don't remember whether it was Puri Maharaj or whether it was Narayan Maharaj. One of the Gaudiya Math sannyasi. And they were visiting the city of Italy. And in Italy, they saw a sculpture where the person was completely, you know, yeah, not wearing anything on the body. No. And as soon as this sannyasi, you know, he understands all arts and everything. He's a very elevated soul. He immediately looked at that sculpture and pointed. He said, why no kopin? He just pointed like that. He said, why no kopin? So his mind, okay, you can show everything else exposed, but kopin has to be there. That is not acceptable. And it said that even when Michelangelo, he draw the pictures of Adam and Eve. Now he is again a great artist. So he showed them completely without clothes. So the Pope had to come and he told them, oh no, you cover those parts with leaves. No, it's not allowed. So again, a spiritualist, he had to come and he said, no, you can't show them completely. You know, you have to cover it up. And Michelangelo of India, a very great artist, his name is Raja Ravi Verma. Have you heard this name? Yeah, he's almost like a Michelangelo of India. Very wonderful artist. I will encourage that you see the Radha Krishna paintings of Raja Ravi Verma. He shows Radharani in Navari Sari. Forget about parts being exposed. You know what is Navari Sari? It's a kind of sari. The normal saris, they measure 6 wars, whatever. I don't know what is war in English, probably meters. And this is another sari which wears 9 meters. So that entire sari has to cover your body. And you see Radharani always wearing a Navari sari, whenever I have seen his paintings. So he's an artist. He's a Mahajan amongst Indian artists. And he's painting the divine deities like this. So we understand, you know, this is a tradition. There is, you know, there is no need of any such special feature. This is my version, of course. You know, I don't know. I have not studied art. But following the authority of Raja Ravi Verma, this is what I have seen. It never shows divine personalities in such kind of dresses. There is one very famous artist. He does not belong to our faith. He's from some other faith. And he always, whenever he has to show Vedic deities, he puts them in a very exposed fashion. There has been a lot of debate on that all over India. And, you know, he very openly does that. He draws paintings of Vedic worshipable personalities in, you know, features which are having not wearing clothes and all. So he was charged. He was asked that, you know, why are you specifically depicting divine personalities like this? You know, if you want to at all depict somebody like that, show anybody like that. That is fine. But why divine personalities? So his argument was that, you know, actually I'm making them look more beautiful. Because I'm showing them like this, they actually look more beautiful. Then the question was raised, but then when you depict divine personalities of your faith, you don't show them like this. You show them fully covered and nicely, you know, respectable dresses. Why only Indian Vedic? So, and then whenever any artist, when such question is asked, now he has, you know, 2 hukum ka ekkas, you know, they always take out these 2 cards, which are like the ultimate, they feel that they are like the Brahmastra of all the artists. He says, what about your Khajuraho temples? You see, all those Vedic personalities being depicted like that. So why are you shouting at that? And second is, what about Lord Krishna performing the Vastaharan Leela? It is right there in your scriptures. You are showing the Vedic personalities should not be described like that, but it's right there in your temples, it is there in your scriptures. So what should we do? So I did some kind of an independent research on this whole Khajuraho thing. And because I really was bothered by this. I was also faced by one person who argued like that with me once. And there are very interesting observations that I came out. And these, of course, we don't really encourage people to go on net and look for things. But if you at all get a chance to look the article on Wikipedia, about it's a very wonderful and impartial article. And one should read it very nicely. And they bring out these wonderful points. The first point which is brought out here in the research is that there were totally actually 80 temples in this city of Khajuraho. Out of them, only 20 are remaining now. What happened to the 80 temples? Why only these 20 temples were preserved and others, these were not destroyed? There is no answer for that. And amongst these 20 temples also, only 10% of the images are having erotic forms. That's what they describe. But there is no justifying answer for why and who destroyed the other temples. There's no justifying answer. Second, whatever temples that are surviving are the combinations of Hindu temples as well as Jain temples. And all of them have similar images. So if these images are of the divine deities, then why Jain temples are also having these images who strictly don't believe in Hindu deities? That is the second observation. Third, if these temples were destroyed by the, when the Mughal emperors, they came and they conquered and they were destroying the temples, you know, and if these personalities were predicted in these scriptures, sculptures, are divine deities, then why are not destroying them? Because Mughals typically were destroying all the deities. Wherever they saw destroyed, they were destroying it. But they did not destroy it. These questions do not have any answer. Third, now this is written by a British author, and he says, some people claim that Vedic scriptures, they describe about dharma, artha, kama, moksha, so kama is also a part of that. So therefore, the descriptions of these various deities, you know, they conform to the descriptions of the Kama Sutra, which is also Vedic literature. So he says, he has studied that particular literature very nicely, and he says that forget about this Vedic, the details of this particular scripture, that is not at all resembling at all. Rather, he said there is a strong influence of tantric rites that he finds in those all those type of scriptures. There is a lot of tantricism, the acts which are included in tantricism, they are actually depicted there. And the fifth is that these all temples were built only between the period of 950 AD and 1000 AD. Only between the period of 50 to 60 years of age, all these temples just came up. And these temples were built by a dynasty of kings called as Chandelas. And they find that between this particular 50 to 60 years of age, this particular dynasty had flourished economically very well. And because the dynasty flourished economically, whenever there is an economic prosperity, there is also an impulse for a lot of sensualism. And that has been depicted in these sculptures. So instead of saying that, some people have a concept that everything that is Vedic is good. Everything that is old is good. No, it's not like that. Mahabharata speaks about all the Pandavas, and it also speaks about Yudhishthira Maharaj's gambling match. So we follow all the behavior of Yudhishthira Maharaj except the gambling match. Vedic scriptures tells you what is to be followed and what is not to be followed also. So this is something which is not to be followed. It is appearing in the Vedic period, but it looks like a temporary slightest deviation against the principle of pure devotional service, which is actually brought out in the scriptures. So it's not really such a Vedic thing. Actually, Devamrut Maharaj, he mentioned yesterday's class that he gave class, not yesterday, sorry, on Nityananda Tridoshi. He mentioned that how these Vedic concepts, they get degraded. He said that even Bhagavad Gita got degraded. And that's why Krishna had to again come and speak it. So something which is as absolute and as high and as serene and as pure as knowledge of Bhagavad Gita can get disturbed and contaminated, then what to speak of any other principle? And the second thing that they always bring out is the Vatsaharan Leela of Lord Krishna. So again, this is very contextual. So briefly describing this pastime, of course I'm not at all qualified to speak on that pastime as such, but we will just read out a purport which is there by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, and it's a fantastic purport. So just to brief, the gopis of Vrindavan, who are the exalted devotees of Lord Krishna, they actually wanted Lord Krishna as their husband. And as the scriptures enjoin, they were worshipping the goddess Durga or goddess Katyayani for that particular purpose. And they observed a vrata which went for 1 month. And at the end of this vrata, they were taking this specific bath. And Vishwanatha Thakur actually explains that when they were going for this particular bath in Jamuna, they actually invited Srimati Radharani also, who was also performing this particular vrata. And so at that time, there was Srimati Radharani as well as all the gopis taking bath in Yamuna. And then Krishna just came on the bank, and he said, Shukadeva Goswami mentions that Krishna, he's a Paramatma in the heart of all living entities. So he understood the desire of the gopis, that they want to accept him as a husband. Of course, we know at that time, Krishna was hardly 8 years old. So there's no way that you can actually marry a boy who is 8 years old. So, but he knew that gopis want to accept me as a husband. So he went to the bank, and then, you know, he said to the gopis that, you know, he first of all stole their garments away. And then he said, then they understood that, you know, he has stolen the garments. So they said, okay, now if you want the garments, you have to come each one by one individually, and then only I'll give you the garments back. And Shukadeva Goswami very nicely says, and this is actually described in the Srimad Bhagavatam very nicely, that although it was a very embarrassing situation for these girls, and many of these girls were actually from very aristocratic families. So it's a very embarrassing proposal for a girl, you know, to just to come out like that, completely without clothes, and, you know, take the garments back. Very embarrassing. But still, they were laughing and joking in the water. And it's mentioned why they were doing like that. He said, because they had a desire to accept Krishna as a husband, and they understood that the very fact that Krishna is spending time with us like this, that means he's giving us attention. And one of the, you know, reasons a wife always fights with the husband is that because you don't give me enough attention. So here the gopis understood that Krishna through this act is actually showing that how much he's attentive about us and he's caring about us. So they were actually laughing and joking, and now Vishwanacharya Thakur says that actually gopis were saying that, hey, you go first, I'll see how Krishna deals with you, then I'll go. And they were absolutely cool about it, not really troubled or disturbed. And then they went out just like that, they were shivering in water. And they said that as soon as they came out, that Krishna was completely happy. He was satisfied. Because Krishna also was thinking that how can somebody accept a proposal like that? So just see the surrender of these personalities. I said something which is so embarrassing and so, you know, completely out of the culture, and they're accepting it just because I am saying it. So he was completely happy with that. And when they came, you know, Krishna was not, he didn't stop there, and he said, now because you have committed offense to Varun Dev, because you entered in the water without clothes. So therefore, whenever we take bath also, we never take bath without clothes. We always wear at least a gamsha and take bath, because it's not recommended. It's an offense to Varun Dev to take bath like that. So he said that. And he said, what is the punishment for that? You have to raise your hands and pray and bow down. And actually, they did that also, just for Krishna's pleasure. Now, this is actually very, for a normal person, it's very disturbing that how can Krishna do like this? And how can gopis do like this? So I will just read out this one purport here. And this purport is so wonderfully composed. I really, whoever has written this purport, must be Rudananda Maharaj, His Holiness. It's very wonderful. I'll just read out to it. It's so nice. He says, the transcendental position of Krishna consciousness is clearly described here. The gopis decided that it was better to renounce their so-called family tradition and traditional morality and simply surrender unto the Supreme Lord Krishna. This does not mean that Krishna consciousness movement advocate immoral activities. In fact, the devotees of ISKCON practice the highest standards of restraint and morality. But at the same time, we recognize the transcendental position of Krishna. Lord Krishna is God and therefore has no material desire to enjoy young girls in sexual affairs. As will be seen in this chapter, Lord Krishna was not at all attracted by enjoying the gopis. Rather, he was attracted to their love and wanted to satisfy them. And then, later on they say, when Krishna personally appeared 5,000 years ago, he exhibited these wonderful pastimes which attract our attention. We should not become envious or shocked when we hear that God can perform such pastimes. Our shock is due to our ignorance. Because if we try to perform these activities, our bodies would be afflicted by lust. Lord Krishna, however, is the supreme absolute truth and is therefore never disturbed by any material desire whatsoever. Thus, this incident in which the gopis gave up normal standards of morality and raising their hands to their head, bowed down in compliance with Krishna's order, is an example of pure devotional surrender and not a discrepancy in religious principles. And it's some sentence from Prabhupada's Krishna book are quoted. The gopis were all simple souls, and whatever Krishna said, they took to be true. In order to be freed from the wrath of Varundev, as well as to fulfill the desired end of their vows and ultimately to please their worshipable Lord Krishna, they immediately abided by his order. Thus, they became the greatest lovers of Krishna. Nothing can be compared to Krishna consciousness of gopis. Actually, the gopis did not care for Varuna or any other demigod. They only wanted to satisfy Krishna. And if you read Krishna book, then Srila Prabhupada quotes the 8th verse of Shishashtakam, that Krishna, whatever you can do with us, I am still your servant eternally. And he said, this is what was demonstrated by the gopis. And even if this whole pastime is still confusing to the mind and we are not so clear about it, and this is another such naked bathing pastime appears in Srimad Bhagavatam, and it appears in the first canto. Which one is that? Exactly, Shukadev Goswami. So when Shukadev Goswami was born, he was wandering in the forest, and again he was not wearing any clothes on his body. And he passed through a lake where some women were taking bath. And Prabhupada actually explains in Krishna book that it is a tradition in Indian culture that there are certain areas of the lakes or rivers which are exclusively protected for women. And then they can just go and take bath whatever the way they want. And no man is ever allowed to enter into that place. So he was just passing by, and he was passing by this lake. And these women were there, and they were actually not properly covered. They were all, you know, without clothes, and they were taking bath. But as Shukadev Goswami passed from that place, they did not feel the need of covering them up. Why? Because they understood that this person is beyond the modes of material nature. He's a liberated soul, and he does not distinguish between the male and the female form. It's mentioned that when Krishna also went for this Vatsahar and Leela, there were some friends of Krishna with him. So Vishwanatha Thakur comments that they were not grown up friends. They were some tiny toddlers in the village of Vrindavan who were so attached to Krishna that they would follow Krishna everywhere. So, you know, just like small children, you know, wherever the father goes, the children just follow. They like somebody, they'll just follow the person. So these tiny toddlers, Krishna went for this, they went there also. They were not really grown up boys. They were just tiny toddlers of the age of 2 or 3. So similarly, so this vision of Sukhadeva Goswami, although he was 16 years old because he was liberated, it was as innocent as the vision of a toddler. And the women, Prabhupada says, they have a sixth sense. They can actually understand what is there in the mind of a person. This is the power which Krishna has given to all the women actually, so that they cannot be fooled. You know, otherwise men are also very smart and they know how to fool women, right? But then nobody can fool Krishna. So this Krishna's empowerment given to women, they have the sixth sense and they can understand what are the motives of a particular man. You know, and these women, they were all educated, they had the sixth sense and they understood that this man is fully innocent. But as soon as Vyasadev came there, they immediately covered their bodies. Although Vyasadev is also a liberated soul, but because he is a grahastha, they could understand, that, you know, we have to maintain discrimination between the male and the female form. Because he is a grahastha, he follows that discrimination, so therefore we also have to follow it. So the proposal is, if somebody who has taken shelter of Krishna can be so innocent and so pure that the women having sixth sense do not even worry about he passing naked like that, what to speak of Krishna himself? How can he be contaminated by the eyes of the mortal world? No, therefore, he is also definitely beyond, his vision is also definitely beyond. So when Krishna sees you, he directly sees your soul, directly penetrating from all your coverings of intelligence and false ego and mind and everything. He sees the soul personally. However, Krishna wanted to fulfill the desire. So what actually brings the point that actually comes out from this entire story of Vatsahar and Leela is the devotee can go to any extent to please Krishna. Like Narottam Das Thakur, today is his appearance day. And he mentions that, E kule o kule keli dilo tilanjali. I don't bother about what family I belong to or the tradition, I just give tilanjali to it. The akshata of tila, that is the sesame seeds, is offered into the fire when you perform sacrifice. So he's saying that I just give tilanjali to all my family. I just give them, put them in the sacrifice. Why? Because I am, you know, I want to worship Krishna. I want to worship Gauranga. He's my supreme personality of God. So, what I was explaining? Sorry, got distracted. So vastana and tila. Yeah. So what we, the point that comes, sorry, the point that comes out in this whole pastime that Krishna, the devotee can go to any extent to please Lord Krishna. And therefore, these gopis, they gave up their morality, they gave up their moral bindings just to please Krishna. But what is the reciprocation that Krishna gives? Krishna also goes to any extent to satisfy the devotees. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that I know all past, present and future. Did Krishna not know that the artists of Kali Yuga of other faith will quote this as an example to prove their point? Did Krishna not know that it will, this point will cause so much of debate between so many intellectuals in future in Kali Yuga? He knew that. But that did not matter for him. What mattered for him is to satisfy his devotees at that particular point of time. So Krishna also, he goes to any extent to please his devotees. So Krishna is Supreme Personality of Godhead. And when you go to any extent to please Krishna, Krishna also reciprocates like that. And yeah, there's another story which actually was convinced that Krishna at this point did not have any material qualities. And that story appears later in the chapter during the fight between the Banasura and Lord Krishna. So what happened, the grandson of Lord Krishna, Aniruddha. So Krishna's son is Pradyumna and Pradyumna's son is Aniruddha. Aniruddha fell in love with the daughter of Banasura, Usha. And then there's a wonderful story actually. It's a very wonderful mystical story. Very, very entertaining actually. There's no need to watch any movie or television serial also. If you can just read the story of this Aniruddha and Usha. Beautiful pastime. So it's said that actually even Banasura, when he saw Aniruddha with Usha like that, you know, he just entered into palace in a mystical way. And you know, it was very clear that they are having a relationship. But Banasura, he just seeing the beauty of Aniruddha, he was so convinced that, oh my God, you know, he's so beautiful. He said, my daughter cannot select any more beautiful person than this personality. He was so beautiful. Still, he was angry. And Prabhupada says he became angry because of family prestige. He writes in Krishna book. So this is the quality of demons, you know. Even they are attracted to Krishna, they choose to maintain their animosity. They choose to maintain that. The one thing I found good in this entire purport of, entire chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam, that although, you know, this personality, Pururava, he's exhibiting tremendous desire for enjoying sense gratification, he never becomes inimical towards Krishna. If you compare the lust of Pururava and compare the lust of Ravan, there is a huge difference. One is following the Vedic style, wanting to fulfill his lust, and one is going against the Vedic style, against Krishna, against his words, against his orders, right? So even in that, even in that consciousness of a, you know, fallen consciousness in one sense, he's still Vedic. He's still following the Vedic concept, you know, and that's why he finds his place in Srimad Bhagavatam. He's very gentle the way he approaches Urvashi also throughout it. He's quite gentle in this, the whole approach, right? So not like Ravan. So this Aniruddha, so the demons, they maintain their animosity even after understanding that Krishna is so nice. And then therefore, what happened, that ultimately he found out, okay, Aniruddha is there, and then he called all his soldiers. Okay, grab him, catch him. And Aniruddha, he just took one iron rod, didn't have anything with him. And all these soldiers, they're attacking Aniruddha, and he was simply smashing everybody with the iron rod. Like a kung fu expert in today's terminology. Because so many soldiers coming and they're just smashing everybody, cut, 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 within just an iron rod. They were coming with all different weapons. So ultimately, Banasura released the Nagapash, which was given to him by Lord Shiva. So he was caught. And then 4 months, Aniruddha did not return home. So the Yadav family were worried. So Narad Muni came and told that, hey, you know what happened to Aniruddha? It's Banasura, he has caught him. He's there with him. So the entire Yadu family came. They are all declared a war against this Banasura demon. And they're fighting, and this Shukadeva Goswami explains that actually anybody who recites or reads the description of fight between Lord Shiva, actually Lord Shiva supported Banasura. Between the fight between Lord Shiva and Lord Krishna in the morning, he said he will never get defeated in any of the efforts of his life. any effort you have in your life you want to make, you know, he will not get defeated. May that be spiritual effort, material effort, whatever. It's a devotee, you have to study this pastime and you have to take pleasure in Krishna winning this whole episode. Two things are there. Not that, you know, so he mentions that. You have to study this episode and to see, take pleasure in Krishna winning this whole battle. Wonderfully. So at one point of this battle, it was so vigorous, it was so strong that Balaram, he was actually smashing everybody with his club. Very powerful. So he smashed two of the most powerful commander-in-chiefs of Banasura army. I think Kumbhanda and Kupakarna, something like that. Two names. He smashed them down. And then he was shocked. Banasura, how can you smash my... So he was actually fighting with Satyaki that time, who was a commander-in-chief of Yadu army. He said, forget this Satyaki, I want to attack Krishna only. Suddenly he just turned to Krishna and he had 1,000 arms. So he took 500 bows, right? And 2,000 arrows. No, that means he must have had 4 arrows in each arm, the rest of the 4 arms. And it's 500 bows and 4 arrows. He just started attacking Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami explains, this whole sight was like water flowing from a strainer. Like how you see Abhishek sometimes, you do, the strainer is there. Now the water is, so like the water flowing from the strainer out. Psst, like all the arrows. And Krishna very wonderfully, he just cut down all the arrows. And just to teach Banasura a lesson, not only cut down all the arrows, he cut down all his horses, his chariot driver, everything, finished. Banasura was on ground. And then Krishna took up his weapons to attack him at that time. Now, we're coming back to our topic. So at that time, what happened, there was one demigoddess. And Vishnu Chakra Thakur explains that her name was Kodara Devi. There was a family deity of this particular Banasura. She had an affectionate relationship like a son with Banasura. And she was shocked that now Krishna is about to kill. So what did she do? She shouldn't have done like this. But she did that. What she did is that she appeared on the scene naked with scattered hair. Just in front of Krishna, like that. And as soon as Krishna saw that, Krishna turned his head in disgust. He did not want to see this particular form. And that was a time which Banasura took and he ran away. He got saved. And then again, the fight began afterwards. Now the question can be raised that if Krishna is like having a desire to see the naked forms of women, this was like an open opportunity actually in one sense. But Krishna moved his head in disgust. Just turned his head in disgust. And I remember this one particular past, this same pastime in Vrindavan. And what happened that we were, our group, the devotee of Radha Gopinath temple, they were serving different sadhus in Vrindavan after, on the day of Prabhupada disappearance day and in Kartik month. And on that day, one Nagababa entered the campus. And everybody was looking at him because he was not wearing anything on his body. And I was actually observing what happens when Radhanath Maharaj sees him. And Radhanath Maharaj was not knowing that he is there. So Radhanath Maharaj was just coming like this out of the Fogla ashram. And this Nagababa with all his form, he was just entering. And as soon as Maharaj saw this person, he immediately turned his neck. Must not be with disgust, but with complete disapproval of what this person is doing. And he just went away from that place. He did not tell anybody, hey, please take this man out or whatever. And, you know, did not discuss that with anybody. He just turned his neck and just ran away from the place. And I was remembering this particular pastime. He said, yes, exactly. This is the follower of Lord Krishna. You know. So in Vedic culture, there are so many such appearances where different personalities are appearing probably in an unclothed way. But as Srila Prabhupada rightly points out on this purport, it is not at all acceptable. So therefore, even when Narad Muni, you know, he saw this Nalakuvar and Manigriva, again, they are heavenly, they're coming from heavenly planets. He will understand that this is not an acceptable behavior. It's not an acceptable behavior. Therefore, he cursed them. Out of his compassion, he cursed them because he understood that this is not an acceptable proposal. And Srila Prabhupada comments in that regard. Prabhupada says that in Krishna book, he says, to cover the lower part of a body is a principle of human civilization. And when a man or a woman forgets this principle, they become degraded. So he writes in the chapter of Nalakuvar and Manigriva. So it's very clear. It's very clear from the scriptures. So therefore, Narottam Das Thakur mentioned, today is his appearance, and he has mentioned that, you know, what is that song? Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoibe Akuti Tabe Kabe Hama Bhujaba Se Yugala Piriti. He said the scriptures, which are actually bringing out ultimately the conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna and all parts of the scriptures, is I will not be able to understand the scriptures unless I follow in the footsteps of Rupa and Raghunath Das Goswami. And that actually means following the vows and the character of Rupa and Raghunath Das Goswami, and also learning from the literatures of Rupa and Raghunath Das Goswami. So unless we actually learn these chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam from Parampara, we cannot really understand them. It could be very bewildering. And then just one last thing I wanted to mention. And we see that, you know, this is how Maya affects a personality. You know, is mentioned here, the Pururava, he says, "Oh, beautiful one, your beauty is wonderful and your gestures are so wonderful. Indeed, you are attractive to all human society. Therefore, since you have come out of your own accord from heavenly planets, who on earth would not agree to serve such a demigoddess such as you?" So, somehow because we have been hearing in the Gaudiya Vaishnava Sampradaya from very great speakers the meaning of service, obviously he is not wanting to serve. But this is how Maya Devi actually fools us. Devamara actually explaining about that effect of the testosterone. What is that? Hormone? Testosterone hormone. This hormone has such an amazing effect. You know, it makes you feel that actually you are serving a person. It's such an obvious thing that you're wanting to enjoy. You're not wanting to serve. And therefore, then within few years of married life, there is separation, unfortunately. Because from both sides, there is a high expectation of enjoyment. So we should know that, you know, again, another one deviant of Vedic tradition who also existed in our same country, who actually explained that, you know, he wrote a book also. The book mentions Sambhog Se Samadhi. You know, you heard this book name? Sambhog means sensitification. Samadhi means the ultimate perfection of life, of meditation. So he mentions that from Sambhog, you can actually attain Samadhi. However, this is exactly against the principle of Lord Krishna. And what does Krishna mention in Bhagavad Gita? He says, Bhogaishwarya Pasaktanam Taya Aparuta Chetasam Vyavasayatmika Buddhir Samadhau Na Vidhiyate. If you are Bhogaishwarya Pasaktanam, you can never attain Samadhi. And he's saying you can attain Samadhi by becoming Bhoga. Whom should we believe? You know, Lord Krishna or him? So we obviously believe Lord Krishna. So Krishna's version, so therefore we understand scriptures from the great personalities who are coming in the Sampradaya, and then therefore we don't have any doubts in the mind. In fact, Prabhupada says the greatest demon in, he says this in teachings of Queen Kunti, that the greatest demon in Kali Yuga is the doubt. You know, the demons in Kali Yuga, they don't have sharp teeth and, you know, 10 heads like that. But there are probably 10 doubts in the mind, which are as sharp as, you know, and they can destroy your spiritual life. And Prabhupada says, my books, they are like the Sudarshan Chakra. So they just come out and they cut all the doubts to pieces. So therefore, we hear, read from Srila Prabhupada's book and then we clarify our doubts. Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Any questions, comments? Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. So recently, Govindra was giving a Bhagavatam class and he was mentioning that our material body is like a boil and we cannot certainly, you know, exhibit our boils. If I have a boil, then I have to take care of the boil. I will not necessarily show that boil to everybody. But the modern civilization means to show the boil everywhere and everybody. So that is how the things are getting degraded. At the same time, an artist, he should be more than a moralist. That means he should be a devotee of the Lord. That means a devotee is one who utilizes everything in the service of the Lord. That is what the devotee is. So therefore, when an artist or anybody who does not have the guidance of the spiritual master, certainly things will be not very nice. So you mentioned in the case of Michelangelo, and he was told to cover those private parts. I think he did not do it. He did not accept the order of the Pope or anybody there. So therefore, as long as one follows the authority, the spiritual master, whether he may be singer, artist, or philosopher, or anybody, so everything goes on smoothly. As soon as he deviates from the principles given by the spiritual master, then there will be a chaos. Therefore, Prabhupada actually mentioned, you only read out, that proper civilization means to cover their body properly, isn't it? So, also we hear that phalena parichyate. See, everything is judged by the result, isn't it? So, we can dress the deities also in a not a very nice way, but then what is the result of that?
Yeah.
Result of that. Nobody will be elevated, isn't it? Because we think we are the body, so everywhere we look the same thing. That means, although they are the spiritual personalities, but if they are not dressed properly, then any ordinary man or a devotee, actually, who is a practitioner, who is not an elevated devotee, he will naturally, think all different things, which is not good for him also. So therefore, anything that is not utilized in the service of the God, according to the principles given by the spiritual masters, will not be, it will only lead to degradation. So therefore, everybody has to have the spiritual authority so that he can utilize their talents in the service of Lord, and that is the perfection of life. That's what I just wanted to mention. Thank you. Hari Bhav.
Thank you so much. All inside. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Any other questions anybody has? No. This is the last question we will take, I think. Yeah. Please. Anybody can give mic?
So, according to the Bible, can I ask about the Bible?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer the question, but you can ask.
So, according
to... many great qualified speakers.
According to the Bible, when Adam and Eve were staying in the Eden Garden, like in the starting, they stayed naked. And when they committed the first sin, like having the apple, then they realized that they are naked. And they should hide themselves from the God. So, would you explain that?
Yeah, something similar to Shukadeva Goswami.
Like, first they were staying naked only.
Yeah. So, Shukadeva Goswami also, because he was completely, very similar to Shukadeva Goswami and Vasudev. So, Shukadeva Goswami was wondering, actually you probably don't know who is Shukadeva Goswami. He is a son of Vasudev. If you go down the temple, there's a small statue there of Shukadeva Goswami speaking Srimad Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. It is this divine personality through whose wonderful mouth the Srimad Bhagavatam was revealed to the entire society. And he was just 16 years old at that time. And he stayed in the womb of his mother for 16 years. And as soon as he came out, he was directly 16 years old. So his mother didn't have to really worry about, doing so many things for him. He was directly 16 years old. And as soon as he came out, he just ran from the house. He was liberated. He was not coming out because he was feeling that the material world is such a miserable place, I should not come out. So Krishna had to come there. They called Krishna personally. Vasudev called Krishna. So Krishna gave him promise, my dear Shukadeva Goswami, nothing will happen to you, don't worry, you can come out. I assure you that. Because the material world is such a horrible place, it makes you forget Krishna very easily. Therefore, coming to temple is very important. People sometimes argue that why you have to come to temple? God is there everywhere. God is everywhere, but you are not remembering him. That is the problem. So here you come, you can at least remember him. He's there. So therefore, because Krishna assured him that you will never forget me. So he was in such a liberated state that he could just wander around naked. That is a complete realization of absolute truth that he had. Vasudev, with same level of realization, but because he was a householder, he was a grihastha, he had to discriminate between male and the female form. So I don't exactly know what is the meaning of performing sin, as in terms of eating the apple. That's something which I don't fully know. But what the analogy that I understand is that the spiritual soul is also from the spiritual world. And the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, he actually comes to the material world. So in the spiritual world, there is absolutely no such... there is female and male there also, but in a very different spiritual way. Not specifically in terms of the material bodies. So it's difficult to understand by our material minds. Our minds are also made up of matter. So we can't understand spirits fully with our material mind. So therefore, what is that shloka? Vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atma bhakto. Through sound vibration, you cannot understand spirit because sound is matter. And spirit is spirit. But that sound vibration, when comes through the mouth of a preceptor, a spiritual personality, and then you hear that same sound, then that sound is spiritual. So we cannot just understand through our minds and through normal study the spiritual, but we can understand. So yes, they also have male and female forms in spiritual world, but not the same way as we consider the male and female in this material world. It's different. But when we have the desire to enjoy separate from Krishna, we are asked to come to this material world. So because they were forbidden to eat that apple, I believe, and they still went ahead and did it, that was something similar to not obeying the order of Krishna. And they immediately came to the material world. They immediately came on the material platform. The difference between material and spiritual, Prabhupada says, is forgetful of Krishna. When you are remembering Krishna, then that is spiritual. When you are forgetful of Krishna, it is material. So as soon as you disobey Krishna, you are on the material platform. Therefore, Yudhishthira Maharaj also, he was asked to speak the lies. Krishna asked him to do that, but he did not agree for moral reason. So immediately that was a material activity. No spiritual activity. Spiritual means to follow Krishna. That's very important. So this is my understanding, but if anybody else wants to answer the question. So that discrimination is material. So in material world, that discrimination has to be maintained. Prabhupada said that just like, you know, in spiritual sense, both are all women and men are spirit souls. Right? There is no distinction. But Prabhupada says, but just like that, even the tiger is a spirit soul. Right? But do you go and embrace a tiger? No. Even a spiritualist will not do that, actually. Of course, there's an example of Ramanujacharya once putting, or one of his followers, putting a hand in the mouth of a snake and taking out a thorn because the snake was feeling pain. But that's an exceptional case. Many great advanced souls can do that. And another, Gaudiya Vaishnava devotee who could sit on the tiger and slap him and ask him to chant Hare Krishna. I think his name was Gadadhar Pandit. But unless you have on that level of, we can't go and embrace a tiger. At least in ISKCON, we don't do it. So similarly, so just like we maintain the discrimination between an animal and a man, similarly, we also, within human society, we maintain the discrimination between a man and woman also. That is creation of God. We have to appreciate it. But through that discipline, we can actually go back to Godhead. We can get rid of our material desires and can go back to Godhead. Yes. Srila Prabhupada ki. Ananta koti Vaishnava vrinda ki jai.